Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 5th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Heroes Among Us, by Tony Reed. This is from Decatur. That's the trouble with reality. There aren't always enough heroes in it. Happily, the Decatur-based Heroes of Legend cosplay group stands ready to intervene in our mundane lives faster than you can say Iron Man or Captain America, Superman, Spider-Man, Green Lantern, Harley Quinn, Elsa, Rapunzel, Iron Patriot, or Thor. These are some of the comic book, storybook, movie characters. All right, Thor was first a Norse god dating back some 18 centuries before Marvel Comics recruited him, portrayed by Heroes of Legend. The cosplay part of their title simply means playing characters in costume. Now, some might question describing Harley Quinn as a costumed hero, considering she has some troubling social tendencies, wields a baseball bat, and was the Joker's main squeeze until his attention wandered. But 19-year-old Kat Fuller, who steps out in Harley Quinn's red and blue striped leggings and matching red, blue, and gold Property of Joker bomber jacket, says she nevertheless sets an example for females as someone willing to bat her own path through life. Not all of Quinn's life choices are good ones, but young girls love the character, excited by the rebellious streak of an in-your-face anti-heroine who makes no apologies for being herself. Kids say to me, "I want to be just like you," says Fuller, who lives in Decatur. I smile at them and say, "Are you, like, sure about it? I mean, I am pretty cool, but I don't think you want to end up exactly like me." Tap dancing around the minefield of interacting with and amusing children is a task worthy of any superhero's mettle, and the Heroes of Legend all get a charge out of it. The group was founded a year ago by Warrensburg man Wes Crawl, whose startling, realistic Iron Man costume actually lights up. And while he may not fly, he has to know how to verbally twist and roll while being strafed by intense kid questioning. We were out of the main hangar restaurant next to Decatur Airport for a Marvel theme night, and these kids kept asking me, "Will you fly? Will you please fly?" And I was like, "Well, guys, I am right here by the airport, and if I go and fly off, it's going to make the control tower mad." Crawl, who works security in his day job, first secured the Iron Man role 3 years ago while working with the Gateway Super Friends cosplay group out of St. Louis. He loved the idea of transforming himself into something fantastic, but inspiration really took flight when he realized not all the costumed superpowers are pretend. I was at a charity event outside of the St. Louis Zoo, and I watched this little boy who was disabled let go of his walker and walk towards Superman so he could hug him, says Crawl, 35. You really can make a difference, and the Heroes of Legend motto is, "Be the light to show the way." I am not doing this to be rich. I am doing this because I want to give something back to the community. Heroes of Legend charges a small fee for birthday parties and similar events, based on the number of characters and how long they are there, but works kids' hospital wards and similar worthy causes for free. Crawl personally recruits new characters and vets carefully for such things as too skimpy costumes. You don't want too skimpy around kids, he says. He currently has a stable of 9 fellow cosplayers, 6 men, 3 women, and usually insists on them being at least 18, although he made an exception for 15-year-old Alec Ward from Warrensburg, who had the sterling characteristics he was looking for to play Captain America. The captain was looking like he'd recently taken one for the team, however, hopping about with the aid of a crutch after a collision with a rival high school basketball player estimated to weigh a superlative 300 pounds. Perhaps a future cosplay Incredible Hulk? But the still agile captain was all smiles as he limped and joked with his fellow characters and posed for pictures. His proud mom, Amy Ward, watching her son totally working his superhero thing, said it isn't just kids who crave ideals to look up to. At the end of the day, we all hope there is a hero out there somewhere, she said. And from the pictures that accompany this article, includes one with several members of the cosplay group, Kat Fuller, Alec Ward, Wes Krall, David McKee, and Amanda Chapel. There's also a picture of the back of Kat Fuller's Harley Quinn costume, including the replica of the jacket worn by the character in the Suicide Squad film. And another article from Decatur, Chris Lisvardi writes, Sewer Rate Increase on Council's Plate. The Decatur City Council will be asked today to approve a plan to raise rates for sanitary sewer usage as a way to generate funding for federally required repair work. The plan would incrementally raise the charge for the average household from approximately $7 per bill to $11 over the next 5 years, City Manager Tim Gleason said. It is expected to generate enough funding to cover the costs for what is anticipated to be a $70 million worth of repairs to the sewer system to be made in that time frame, Gleason said. We haven't had the resources to address this issue, Gleason said. We don't have a choice. The first rate increase would go into effect May 1st. The city has agreed to a consent order with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency on the first $30 million worth of work to be completed by December 31, 2018, Gleason said. The proposed rate increase plan puts into place a structure for the additional $40 million that at this point is known to be needed, he said. We didn't want to be coming back to the community again in 3 years, Gleason said. We're doing the right thing by this community to put it in a position so the sewer system will not be a negative impact. As part of the city's efforts to maintain its sewer system, Gleason said the council will be considering the purchase of a Vactor truck for $298,633 from Co. Equipment, Inc. in Rochester. The purchase would add a second, newer truck to clean out the storm and sanitary sewers, removing roots and debris in an attempt to ensure the proper flow of water throughout the system. The city currently operates a similar 2013 cleaning unit. The hiring of 3 additional public works employees will be necessary to operate the new system, along with an additional engineering technician, Gleason said. The money to pay for the team would come from the city's sewer fund. Repairs have become necessary throughout the sewer system, Gleason said. With the necessary council approval, Gleason said work will be on track to begin in the spring as weather permits. Work is needed for repairs and maintenance, including from damage caused by debris and the infiltration of roots, along with separating gutter lines and sump pump connections, Gleason said. In some cases, he said replacement will be the only option in the places where the system has most deteriorated. We do not want to allow ourselves to be in the same position again, Gleason said. Even with the rate increase, he said Decatur would remain in the lower third of sewer usage charges for comparable communities. The plan sets the increase in the sewer usage rate each year through May 1, 2022, at which point it would increase annually by 2.5%, or the annual percentage change of the U.S. Department of Labor Midwest Urban Consumer Price Index, whichever is greater. In other business, the council will be setting the city's property tax levy for next year. Gleason said the goal is for the property tax rate to remain as close to the same as feasible. The sidebar mentions that if you go, the Decatur City Council meets today at 5:30 p.m. in the Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. And also from the front page, but national news, federal government blocks Dakota Access Oil Pipeline route from Cannonball, North Dakota. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers said Sunday that it won't grant an easement for the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline in southern North Dakota, handing a victory to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and its supporters, who argued the project would threaten a water source and cultural sites. North Dakota's leaders criticized the decision, with Governor Jack Dalrymple calling it a serious mistake that prolongs the dangerous situation of having several hundred protesters who are camped out on federal land during cold, wintry weather. U.S. Representative Kevin Cramer said it's a very chilling signal for the future of infrastructure in the United States. The four-state, $3.8 billion project is largely complete except for the now-blocked segment underneath Lake Oahe, a Missouri River reservoir. Assistant Secretary for Civil Works Joe Ellen Darcy said in a news release that her decision was based on the need to explore alternate routes for the pipeline's crossing. Although we have had continuing discussion and exchanges of new information with the Standing Rock Sioux and Dakota Access, it's clear that there's more work to do, Darcy said. The best way to complete that work responsibly and expeditiously is to explore alternate routes for the pipeline crossing. The company constructing the pipeline, Dallas-based Energy Transfer Partners, had said it was unwilling to reroute the project. It had no immediate comment on Sunday. Morton County Sheriff Kyle Kirchmeyer, whose department has done much of the policing for the protests, said that local law enforcement does not have an opinion on the easement and that his department will continue to enforce the law. U.S. Secretary for the Interior Sally Jewell said in a statement that the Corps' thoughtful approach ensures that there will be an in-depth evaluation of alternate routes for the pipeline and a closer look at potential impacts. Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Chairman Dave Archambault didn't immediately respond to messages left seeking comment. The federal government has ordered people to leave the Ossetee-Sakowin or Seven Council Fires encampment on Army Corps of Engineers land by today. But demonstrators say they're prepared to stay, and authorities say they won't forcibly remove them. Attorney General Loretta Lynch said the Department of Justice will continue to monitor the situation and stands ready to provide resources to help all those who can play a constructive role in easing tensions. The safety of everyone in the area, law enforcement officers, residents, and protesters alike, continues to be our foremost concern, she added. Earlier Sunday, an organizer with Veterans Stand for Standing Rock said tribal elders had asked the military veterans not to have confrontations with law enforcement officials, adding the group is there to help out those who've dug in against the project. About 250 veterans gathered about a mile from the main camp for a meeting with organizer Wes Clark Jr., the son of former Democratic presidential candidate General Wesley Clark. The group had said about 2,000 veterans were coming, but it wasn't clear how many actually arrived. "We have been asked by the elders not to do direct action," Wes Clark Jr. said. He then talked about North Dakota's authorities' decision to move away from a key bridge north of the encampment by 4 p.m. Sunday if demonstrators agreed to certain conditions, saying the National Guard and law enforcement have armored vehicles and are armed. "If we come forward, they will attack us," Clark said. Instead, he told the veterans, "If you see someone who needs help, help them out." Authorities moved a blockade from the north end of Backwater Bridge with the condition that protesters stay south of it and come there only if there is a prearranged meeting. Authorities also asked protesters not to remove barriers on the bridge, which they have said was damaged in the late October conflict that led to several people being hurt, including a serious arm injury. That heavy presence is gone now, and I really hope in this de-escalation they'll see that, and in good faith, the leadership in those camps will start squashing the violent factions, Cass County Sheriff Paul Laney said in a statement. Protesters also are not supposed to walk, ride, or fly drones north of the bridge, and Laney said that any violation will result in their arrest. Veterans Stand for Standing Rock's GoFundMe page had raised more than $1 million of its $1.2 million goal by Sunday, money due to go toward food, transportation, and supplies. Cars waiting to get into the camp Sunday afternoon were backed up for more than half a mile. A photograph accompanying the article shows a crowd gathers in celebration at the Ossetie-Sakowin camp to celebrate the announcement that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers won't grant easement for the Dakota Access oil pipeline in North Dakota. And from the local page, an article by Valerie Wells, Herald and Review staff writer. Local author talks writing farm tales on school visit. Authors get their ideas from all kinds of places, but most draw on their own experiences in some way. That was the case with Hattie Mae's Halloween by Claudine C. Wargell, who grew up on a farm in the Springfield area and used her childhood memories to help her create Hattie's World. Wargell visited Christina Summers' fourth grade class at Parsons School on Thursday to talk about her book with the students who have been studying it. Summer credits Google with helping her connect to Wargell, and the two women exchanged several emails before Wargell's visit. It was Wargell's first trip to a school to speak to young readers and to answer questions about the writing process and how she chose character names, setting, and plot ideas. Her visit was thanks to a grant from the Decatur Public Schools Foundation. She told the students about growing up on the farm with a black and white TV. "I'm actually that old," she said, laughing, and playing with an older and younger brother, making their own fun from swimming in a muddy cow pasture to making her own Halloween costume of a sow, one of the adventures that found its way into the book. Showing them a photo of herself as a child in ballet class, she said, "I was trying to figure out who I was, what I liked, and what I was good at. Dance," she added, "was not her calling. Do you know what a klutz is? That's me. The family calls me Grace." She eventually discovered writing, and after graduating from the University of Illinois with a degree in communications, she worked for magazines, married, and had two sons, now 18 and 15, and finally published her first children's book. She told the students that her friends, teachers, and her husband encouraged her, though there were a few naysayers. "Sometimes you have to not listen to people who think you're crazy," she said. A pig in the book is named Esmeralda, which was the name of a real pig on the family farm. Wargell said she doesn't remember why they named her that, but most of the pigs were not named. Summer asked the students if they knew why. "Because they'll get turned into bacon," Bryson Smith said. Summer said one of her reading groups is reading Charlotte's Web, and she thought the two books would be compatible. "We do a lot with guided reading now, and we actually do more in-depth work, so we were doing inferring and visualizing," Summer said. In the first chapter, the author introduced Hattie Mae as an ordinary girl and described her life, so Summer asked students to write a first page of their own, using themselves in place of Hattie Mae. "We talked about it a lot and talked about the text itself and what we had in common with Hattie," Tristan Singer said. On a scale of 1 to 10, the book was a strong 9. Another article from Decatur by Huey Freeman. "Grieving souls receive comfort at Christmas Remembrance Service." From Decatur. "On the first day of hazardous winter conditions this season, 12 people braved the weather to meet in honor of their loved ones who have perished. The service of remembrance and hope, held at Central Christian Church Sunday afternoon, was designed to provide comfort to those who are facing the holidays while grieving. The Reverend Don Martin, music and visitation minister, closed the service with prayers entreating God to grant mercy, help, and support to those who are suffering. Afterward, he said that it was good for people to come together to share in their times of need and understand that God is with us all in life. Gene Guthrie, a retired United Methodist pastor, said he has been attending Blue Sunday services since his wife died in July 2011. Jill Guthrie, 54, was killed in a vehicle accident near their home in Danville, Indiana. "We're faithful to remember my wife," said Guthrie, who formerly worked at the Herald and Review. He returned to Decatur after the accident. Jill Guthrie was driving a vehicle at an intersection when an impaired driver ran a red light, striking her at her driver's side door. Two of her children, 17-year-old twins, were at the scene almost immediately as they headed for their summer jobs in the family's other vehicle. Gene Guthrie arrived on the scene a few minutes later. "I knew immediately my wife was dead," he recalled. "The twins did not see her at the accident. They knew she was deceased. I was the only one who saw her." The driver who crashed into her was under the influence of heroin and cocaine. He was tried, convicted of driving while intoxicated, causing death, and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Greg Guthrie, 27, the second of five children of Gene and Jill, said his mother was beloved by her family and employees at the hospital, Hendricks Health Center, where she worked in the cafeteria. "That's the local hospital they took her, where they pronounced that she was gone," Greg said. "A lot of the staff at the ER said it wasn't an easy thing to see her coming in there." Greg Guthrie said he likes to attend the remembrance service every year. "Christmas has never been the same since the accident," he said. "It's supposed to be a joyous time of year. It seems lonely not to have her here. The blue service helps a little bit. It's a good way to remember her, too. It's a nice way to celebrate Christmas without our mom being here. We try to be mindful of her death and try to enjoy the holiday season as much as we can as a family." And another article on the local page from Decatur. Woman in sex abuse case captures suspect's voice on video. A 20-year-old Decatur man is facing felony counts of criminal sexual abuse and domestic battery with a prior domestic battery conviction for allegedly fondling a woman against her will. The victim produced possible evidence against him by videotaping his comments through a locked door after the incident occurred. Jeffrey M. Bullock, Jr. entered not guilty pleas to both counts Wednesday in Macon County Circuit Court. He is being held in jail on $30,000 bond pending a pretrial hearing January 11th. The victim, who did not have a romantic relationship with Bullock, was in her North Side apartment the morning of October 19th when Bullock allegedly began expressing his sexual intentions to her, said a probable cause affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Robert Hecker, Jr. She told police that Bullock stroked her arms and legs, stating he wanted to be with her and have just one night with her. When the woman said she was not interested, he backed her into a corner of the room while continuing to try to grab her arms and stroke her legs. He then fondled her for sexual gratification without permission. She attempted to slap away his hands, but he continued to fondle her, Hecker wrote in his statement. The victim locked herself in her bathroom. As he tried to break into the bathroom, she told him to leave her alone. While she was in the bathroom, she recorded a video in which Jeffrey was talking through the door, stating he loves her and wanted to see her. The victim could be heard by officers who viewed the video as she was yelling at Jeffrey in a frightened and scared manner to leave her alone. A witness who was in the apartment told police that Bullock backed her into a corner and fondled her with his hands while she continued to tell him to stop, Hecker wrote in his statement. The witness said that both the victim and a male who was present told Bullock to stop, but he continued to touch the victim. Bullock, who entered not guilty pleas to both counts on Wednesday, is being represented by the Macon County Public Defender's Office. In a prior case, Bullock was convicted of domestic battery causing bodily harm, for which he was convicted on April 30, 2015. He was sentenced to 6 days in jail and ordered to pay a fine. And from the page A3, December 5th briefs, from Decatur, magnet applications. Decatur's magnet schools are accepting applications for the 2017-2018 school year. The schools are open to any student in the Decatur School District, no matter where the family lives. Families must attend an orientation to apply to each school, and applications are placed into a lottery to fill available seats. Durfee Technology Magnet School, 217-362-3500, French Academy, 217-362-3380, Hope Academy, 217-362-3280, Johns Hill Magnet School, 217-362-3350, Garfield Montessori School, 217-362-3370, and Enterprise Montessori School, 217-362-3390, are the district's magnet schools. For more information or an orientation schedule, call the school. From Decatur, Pajama Party. Scoville Zoo's Pajama Party with Santa will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. and 5 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, December 10th. Participants aged 3 to 10 will make a Christmas ornament, decorate cookies made by Mrs. Claus, and have close encounters with some amazing zoo animals. Kids will also hear a story from Santa and share their wish lists. Bring a camera to take pictures. The fee is $12 for residents and $15 for non-residents. Parents must be present. Call Scoville Zoo at 217-421-7435 or register online at www.decatur-parks.org. From Springfield, traffic caution. The Illinois State Police are warning motorists to exercise extreme caution during inclement weather conditions. From 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Sunday, District 9 troopers investigated 17 crashes, including two involving injuries requiring treatment at hospitals. Motorists should slow down and increase following distance between vehicles. Speed is often a contributing factor in crashes during inclement weather. District 9 comprises Sangamon, Christian, Logan, Cass, Menard, Morgan, and Mason counties. And from Urbana, U of I plans. University of Illinois Chancellor Robert Jones says he's confident the university has effective plans to deal with an emergency like this week's car and knife attack at Ohio State University that left 11 people injured and the attacker dead. Jones said he met with University of Illinois Police Chief Jeff Christensen and other top administrators a couple of weeks ago to review campus emergency plans and was pleased with the procedures in place, particularly that it's clear who would be in charge if the designated emergency officer is out of town. I think we have policies and practices and procedures and training that would allow us to respond in a very, very appropriate way, he said. Campus spokeswoman Robin Kaler said the university also conducted an active shooter drill 2 months ago. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, December 5th, 2016. Please stay tuned.